Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we meet the founder of an innovative set of schools which offers integrated bilingual education. Now that doesn't sound completely innovative at first glance. What makes them innovative is where they're located. In Israel, where Palestinian, Arab, and Jewish communities live separately and segregated in virtually all aspects of daily life, and especially in education. In 1997, an Israeli-American social worker, Lee Gordon, and a Palestinian-Arab teacher, Amin Khalaf, decided to create a school designed to promote complete equality between Arab and Jews, where Hebrew and Arabic are used interchangeably in the classroom, where the curriculum includes extra content to acknowledge and respect the traditions, history, and values of all the Jews, Muslims, and Christians who attend, as well as specialized guidance and mentoring to help students, teachers, and parents express mutual respect and empathy for each other at all times, and especially when conflict breaks out in Israel, Gaza, or the West Bank. From a start of two kindergartens and 50 children in 1998, hand in hand, the Center for Jewish Arab Education has grown to six schools across Israel, serving over 1,700 kids each year from pre-K through high school. For this, Lee Gordon has been awarded this year's Brock International Prize in Education. The 2018 symposium will be held in Tulsa this year with a lecture from the laureate this Thursday at 2:30 at the Helmrich Center for American Research at Gilchrist Museum. That lecture is free to the public. And Lee Gordon joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Lee Gordon, welcome to Studio Tulsa, and congratulations on the Brock International Prize.
Thank you.
Prior to starting Hand in Hand, and as I understand it, Israel's educational system was, and largely still is today, segregated by ethnic groups. Orthodox Jews go to school within their own group. Secular Jews would go within their own group. And Arab Israelis go to, I guess, Arabic schools of some sort. So what was the need for Hand in Hand's creation back in 1997?
Well, I think that, you know, the major divide in Israeli society is really between its Arab minority, Palestinian Arab minority, who make up 22% of the Israeli citizenry, and its Jewish majority, 78%. And even though there is no law that prevents Jewish and Arab children from going to school together, by virtue of language differences, Jews speaking Hebrew, Arabs speaking Arabic, the history of this conflict, and also some geographic segregation, it's very, very rare to find Jewish and Arab children going to school together. And our belief was and is that that separation from a young age is one of the major factors that helps perpetuate this conflict. Not the only thing, of course, but if you never bring people together from a young age, then it's hard to bring them together as adults. And if people don't meet each other from across the divide, it's hard to resolve conflict. I joined forces with an Israeli Arab educator, and we felt that we could try to make a dent in this separation by creating a model of integrated schools as one piece of this peacemaking initiative. You know, integrating schools by itself is not going to solve all the problems, but it is a step forward. And we felt that the need was just crying out at us, and it had never really been done more than on just a piecemeal effort, and we wanted to create a model which is started small and now has grown.
Now, when you first started Hand in Hand, it was, I think, first years and kindergarten students that very first year, and you really started with that class, grew up with them, and added classes as you went on. Was there much difficulty in getting the school started and getting support for the school, support from the government? Because it is a government school, correct?
Right. I mean, I think that, you know, that there were a lot of challenges. That was one of them. I think that not necessarily because we knew 100% what we were doing, but we started very small, and so our requests or our demands from the government were very small. When we had one class of kindergartners, we needed one teacher salary. When we had a class of first graders in the north, we had one teacher salary, some subsidies for transportation. So we weren't asking for millions of shekels, millions of dollars of funding or new facility. But in many ways, the bigger challenge at the beginning was convincing parents, because this was a brand new model, and the parents of these Jewish and Arab children grew up in segregated schools. So they, you know, we had to challenge their imagination and challenge this sort of paradigm of separate schools. It was harder for us to recruit Jewish parents, and that is, you know, they're the majority, and they had many, many more options educationally. The Arab parents were attracted to our model because they felt that this was going to be an improvement in their kids' education, an improvement in their life chances. You know, as a minority that feels discrimination in Israel, education is of paramount importance for upward mobility and success. So in the beginning, we really had to recruit parents almost one by one. This was not mass recruitment. This was spending lots of time meeting with them individually, having parlor meetings in people's homes. But each year, it's become progressively easier as we have a track record, as we have parents who can vouch for the quality of the schools, and as it's become more of a known sort of educational model in Israel.
So how did you overcome this cultural resistance you're talking about?
Well, it was really just a lot of hard work. I mean, I'll just give you an example. In the very first year, when we opened in our second school, we opened two schools at once, our school in northern Israel, in the Galilee region of Israel, we had a bare minimum of Jewish students. We had no waiting list. We basically accepted every Jewish student that came. We had a number of kids who dropped out during the year, but most stayed. But we spent probably 4 months literally on the phone, meeting with parents, having meetings with in people's children, in people's living rooms, bringing educators up to talk about the value of bilingual education. And we also had one class at the Galilee with three teachers. And so we were able to kind of, I guess, market this model by saying, you know, this is not only going to not hurt your children's education, but your children are going to learn a second language and eventually a third language because they learn English, become bilingual. We also told them that at any point, if they didn't like what their kids' experience was, they could pull their kids out and go to the regular Jewish-only or Arab-only neighborhood school that was their, you know, regular school that they would go to. But there were enough people that believed in what we were doing, that, you know, wanted to see a change, that believed that reaching out to the other community, building relationships, learning each other's languages and cultures is important, you know, for their kids and for the community and for the country as a whole. And now, you know, our schools are also considered to be top-notch educationally, so that people are coming to our schools not only because it's integrated, because they're integrated, but because our kids are getting high math scores, they're getting science prizes. Our high school graduates are going off to Israeli universities. And that's actually good, because we want to reach out to people who would not necessarily only be interested in this bilingual integrated model, but just want a good education. And then they are also impacted by the meeting and the encounter with the other community.
If you can take us into what a traditional ethnic school looks like in Israel, is it a place where discriminatory practices are openly taught, or are they sort of subtextually taught? Or can you give us a sense of how different your model looks compared to the average ethnic school?
Sure. I think that in the Israeli public schools, there are some great schools, great Jewish Hebrew-speaking schools and great Arabic-speaking schools, and I don't think discrimination is necessarily taught. I think that there is, you know, there is a lot of racism in Israel, and there is a lot of extremism, but in many places, schools are places where you can break those things down. But if you go to a Jewish-only school, you can live in Tel Aviv, and 10 miles away from you, there is an Arab community, and yet the average Jewish child will never meet that person. So I think that the main difference in what goes on in those schools is a sort of a lack of diversity. There is maybe economic diversity, and there are also Jewish parents who come from different backgrounds. There are Jews who immigrated to Israel from Middle Eastern countries, North Africa, those who came from Europe. But there's a more of a uniformity and a homogeneity that we feel is lacking. And the same thing in Arab communities. There are many Arab children who grow up in towns. I mean, this is kind of hard for Americans to understand, but there are towns in Israel where 100% of the inhabitants are Jewish, or towns where 100% of the inhabitants are Arab. And many Arab children live a very sheltered lifestyle. They learn Hebrew because they're required to learn Hebrew, but they don't necessarily become fluent in Hebrew. My colleague, who co-founded Hand in Hand with me, says that the first time he ever met a Jew eye to eye, an expression in Israel meaning on an equal footing, was when he was 19 years old and came to the university, and he felt like he was at a disadvantage because his Hebrew wasn't strong. He'd never really met Jews in his whole, you know, experience growing up through high school. And so that's the main difference. There are attempts now, and Hand in Hand is actually being a catalyst for some of this, that there are some Jewish schools who are building relationships with Arab schools. So once a week they'll have an afternoon or a morning an Arab class meeting a Jewish class. The schools aren't integrated, but they bring, you know, the kids together for encounters. And that's important, and it's positive, because not everybody in Israel is going to be able to go to an integrated school. I mean, even in our wildest dreams, we'll have 15 or 20 more schools like ours, but we won't be able to cover the entire country. There are schools, however, there are places in Israel, and maybe, you know, in more fundamentalist areas where, you know, where there is a stronger Islamic movement or a much more Orthodox Jewish movement, where kids are brought up in an atmosphere of discrimination or racism, fear of the other, and that lack of meeting, that lack of encounter really can perpetuate that.
So what are the core principles of Hand in Hand? Obviously, integrated bilingual education is a big part of it, but it's far more than that.
Sure. I mean, first of all, one of the things that we said from the very beginning is that we don't want to put the entire burden of the Israeli-Arab or Israeli-Palestinian conflict on the shoulders of six-year-olds. We want these kids to really have a great educational experience. We want them to play soccer, do art, do math, like their teachers, dislike their teachers, you know, what regular kids experience in school. What was needed, and we took us a while to do this, was we want the parents and the adult community to take up some of this slack and really do more than just what the kids are doing. So parental involvement is almost like a requirement in our schools. I mean, parents don't sign a legal document saying they're going to come to every meeting, but when students are admitted to the school, we make the parents aware that there's an expectation that they're going to be involved, both in the school and in extracurricular activities. So we've created over the past 7 years what we called a shared communities program, in which we now have about 2,500 Jewish and Arab adults who come together for regular activities. The school is sort of the platform or the springboard for that, but they do things such as do holiday celebrations together. There's an integrated men's and integrated women's basketball team. And also, it's the adults who are very, very in leadership roles in helping us start new schools. So when we go into a new community, we need adults to help lobby City Hall, to get support from the city, to find a facility, to recruit parents. And we feel that, you know, the schools are a platform for wider social change without forcing the kids to be guinea pigs or do anything more, anything that would sacrifice the education they're getting. One of the things that happens in our schools, people also ask this, is do these meetings and encounters between Jewish and Arab students continue outside the school? And the answer is yes, that when kids get invited to a sleepover or a birthday party or a play date, there's a tremendous interaction between Jewish and Arab kids, and then the parents become involved, because in Israeli society, especially in Arab society, the culture of hospitality is very strong, and you can't go into someone's house without being sat down and given coffee and cake and more cake and coffee. And, so parents form these very strong bonds that sometimes even outlast the children's bonds. The other thing I wanted to mention, you mentioned this at the beginning, is that we wanted our schools to be publicly accredited and funded schools from the very beginning, because we want everybody to have access to our schools regardless of their, you know, financial ability. And we also wanted to reform the system. So by the Ministry of Education, which is like the national school district in Israel, by them taking on and adopting our model, which they're doing step by step, we can have a wider impact in Israel.
Can I talk a little bit about those shared communities? Because I could imagine within the first few years, and maybe it still even continues today, that for the parents, this is their first meaningful interaction with, for Jewish parents, with their first interaction with Arabic families and vice versa.
Exactly. I mean, you know, as I mentioned, the parents grew up in segregated educational systems. And, you know, maybe I'll tell a one-minute story, which I think exemplifies this. There was a mother, a Jewish mother, who brought her daughter to school for the first year, first grade at the third school that we opened in the center of the country. And this was in the middle of that first year. And I met her, and she said, you know, if you had asked me 6 months ago if I would ever let my daughter go to the neighboring Arab village called Umm al-Fahim and go to a birthday party there, she would have said, I probably wouldn't, because I'd be too scared, because the stereotype of Umm al-Fahim is that there's riots, there's demonstrations. And then she said, if you had ever asked me 3 months ago, would I let my daughter go for a sleepover at her girlfriend's house in Umm al-Fahim, I would have said no. But now, she said, my daughter is best friends with this Arab girl. She goes over to the house almost every weekend. And I've gotten to know the family and become friends with this family. And I noticed that the commonality between us is much greater than the differences. They talk about the same things. They're interested in the same kind of music. They both have the same kind of things in their refrigerators. So that's an example of the sort of change that the parents go through. And in many ways, it's much more dramatic among the parents than among the kids, because the kids, for the most part, this is their first experience in school, and it's normal for them that the Arab child is sitting next to the Jewish child, and they're learning in both Hebrew and Arabic. The parents have to sort of overcome this sort of inertia that was keeping them separate. And I think for the parents, it's a very liberating and very empowering experience, and they've, you know, found a lot of joy in building these friendships, even though there's struggles with the school and with the language and things like that.
My guest today is Lee Gordon, the founder of Hand in Hand, the Center for Jewish Arab Education in Israel. They operate, is it six schools now or more?
Six schools.
Six schools across Israel.
We're opening three more in the next 5 years.
He is the 2018 laureate of the Brock International Prize in Education. The 2018 symposium takes place this Thursday at 2:30 at the Helmrick Center for American Research at the Gilchrist Museum. That symposium and lecture will be free and open to the public. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. One of the other core principles that I noticed was it's a reality-based education. So when tensions are high, 5 years after your first class has commenced, the second intifada commenced, you tackle these moments when extremists attack. They become classroom discussions. What has that situation been like during times of high tensions between Jewish and Arabic factions?
Well, it's challenging. It's very challenging. We often, though, find, you know, similar to what I mentioned before about parents and kids, that often the kids have an easier time dealing with it than the parents do. And then part of that is that, you know, these kids are in school and they form these friendships. And a very typical thing you hear from kids, especially as they get over, you know, visitors will come and say, do you have an Arab friend or a Jewish friend? And they will say things like, this girl happens to be my friend. This girl is my friend, and she happens to be Arab, or she happens to be Jewish. She's not my Jewish friend or my Arab friend. She's just my friend, and we can build camaraderie. However, we've not only had the Second Intifada, which started in the year 2000. We've had three mini-wars between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, and two wars between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. And, of course, many terrorist attacks. And these things, this reality spills into the school. The schools are not bubbles. We bring in paid facilitators to work with teachers to help them overcome some of their differences and fears, and also help empower them to work with the kids. We also work a lot with parents. But I think that one of the things that, you know, gives us stability is that everybody in the school has this common interest. They have the education of their kids. And so one of the ways to really build partnership between Jews and Arabs in Israel, and any kind of partnerships in a conflictual situation, is you have to find some kind of common interest that threads you together. Because without that, the differences in perspectives on the political situation can drive you apart. So there are very heated arguments among the parents. The Arab parents do not always see eye to eye with the Jewish parents. And of course, there's differences among the Arabs and differences among the Jews. We saw that in the last war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, when there was tremendous destruction in Gaza and rockets were raining down on Israelis. Many of the Arabs sort of blamed the Israeli government for starting this, and many of the Jews said, well, we don't like the loss of life, but they're throwing rockets at us. The Israeli government has to respond. But at the end of the day, they can agree to disagree, and they can leave as friends. There's also a learning curve, and that is that, you know, many of the parents, when they first come, they have this sort of, you know, maybe, you know, subjective sort of delusion that, well, the school's going to solve all the problems and we're all going to just feel wonderful and kumbaya and leave, holding hands. And they realize that, you know, the school does not have the power to solve all these problems. There's still going to be differences. We're still going to have our separate communities and unique perspectives. And that's also important because I think that we want them to be in this for the long haul, you know, the long haul being, you know, 12 years of their kids' education, but even beyond that. We want this program to continue. We want parents, even after their kids graduate, to continue to be involved. And so there's a little bit of a lowering of expectations sometimes once you're in the middle of this. There was an incident in November of 2014, the Saturday after Thanksgiving in the United States. Some very right-wing Orthodox Jewish extremists came to our school in Jerusalem, spray-painted in Hebrew, "Death to Arabs" on the walls of the school, and set fire to the school and did a lot of damage to two first-grade classrooms. We know who they were because they're now sitting in jail for arson. That night, hundreds of parents came to the school because the next morning, Sunday, is a school day in Israel. They had to get everything set up so the first graders could go to school. They moved them into different classrooms. There was an Arab mother there whose child was in his or her first year. And at the beginning of the evening, she was very pessimistic, and she said, I don't want my child to be a target. This is really not the place for my child. But by the end of the evening, she had received so much support and the solidarity of all these people that came to help out that she said, there's nowhere else that I would want my child to be. And the next morning, there were 1,000 people who came to the school when the school bell rang at 8 o'clock in the morning to express solidarity. People who wouldn't necessarily be sending their children to our school, but said, you know, we believe in coexistence in this model, and it really strengthened the resolve and the community sort of feeling and spirit of the school after this incident, even though it was very scary. And one of the things that came out of that is two of our ninth graders were invited to the White House. President Obama and Mrs. Obama would have a Hanukkah party over the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah every year, and they invited one Arab and one Jewish student to come and participate in the ceremony. Those kind of things will probably continue to happen. There are people in Israel that are threatened by this, that don't want sort of to break down these barriers, but want to build walls higher. And, you know, it's part of what we have to deal with.
That was my next question. It was, you know, in a place where the religious institutions, the mosques, the synagogues are often targeted by extremists of the other side, I can imagine the school would be a target.
Yeah, I mean, I think in many ways we're lucky that we haven't had more of these incidents. We've had a lot of graffiti kind of attacks where people have come at night and spray-painted racist slogans. You know, schools in Israel, it's something it's relevant to the United States these days, of course, and all the school shootings, but schools in Israel have an armed guard in front. You can't just walk into a school building in Israel. They're public institutions, but you have to announce yourself, and there's usually one entrance. So there's no danger on that level. The danger is more, you know, discouraging people feeling afraid, third graders, first graders having their school books burned. It's not a daily occurrence. It's rare. And I think that as our program grows and we get more sort of visibility, we open more schools, we have a larger number of students, it gets easier, even though there will always be some people who are threatened by this. Hand-in-hand also crosses a lot of party lines, so to speak. So we have people from right-wing parties who are endorsing what we're doing. We also have people from left-wing parties endorsing what we're doing. We have clerics, religious leaders in the Muslim, Christian, and Jewish communities in Israel who support what we're doing. And there are also some who don't. You know, it's also one thing that I want to mention, that, you know, among our Arab students, we have Christian Arabs and Muslim Arabs, so there's this meeting of three religions as well, which is an added interesting and challenging component for our schools.
Earlier you talked about how you hoped that Hand in Hand would be a model for larger Israeli education beyond your schools themselves. What are the steps that the Israeli Education Ministry is doing to integrate some of your ideas into overall Israeli education?
Well, one way is by using pieces of our curriculum. Much of our curriculum we've developed on our own with bringing in facilitators, academics from the various universities in Israel, and using the experience gained by our teachers, who are sometimes the best writers and creators of the curriculum. So we've created a curriculum, for example, that allows Jews, Arabs, and Muslims to learn a little bit about each other's religions. In Israel, you can teach something about religion in public schools. And that's something, you know, that most Jews in Israel know very little about Islam and Christianity. Most Christians know little about Islam and Judaism, etc. And so that's a piece of curriculum that is now being used in a number of other schools, and the Ministry of Education has encouraged us to sort of disseminate that. Another piece is the bilingualism that we do, that, you know, we believe that we have this wonderful opportunity for people in Israel to learn both languages, which are spoken by groups, large groups of people in the country. Israel is surrounded by Arabic-speaking countries. And even though not everyone is going to be in a kind of immersion, bilingual, fully integrated model like the hand-in-hand schools, there's a lot more that can be done to have Jews learn more Arabic and have Arabs learn more Hebrew. And we've created some interesting teaching guides and bilingual curriculum pieces that are now being used in a number of other schools. And then outside of the curriculum, I had mentioned earlier that we've sort of stimulated interest in Jewish schools and Arab schools reaching out to each other and having encounters that are not as intense as going to school together day after day, but are still valuable. So if a Jewish child in Tel Aviv can spend once a week or even once a month, a day or part of a day, with school children his or her own age from the Arab community, that's something that can break down barriers. It's a lot of work, and it takes sort of motivation and support from teachers as well as just the ministry sort of saying we want to do this. But those are models. And finally, there are, and I'm not exaggerating now, there are 14 groups of parents and educators in communities around the country that have come to Hand in Hand and expressed interest in us helping them build a hand-in-hand model school. Clearly, we can't open 14 schools right off the bat, but we're looking very seriously at three cities in Israel, the city of Nazareth, Upper Nazareth in the Galilee, which is a city around the ancient city of Nazareth, the city of Akko, which is a mixed city north of Haifa, and an area, a regional area in the western Galilee in northern Israel. All three of those places are viable locales for opening new integrated schools. So whether it's, you know, opening a full-fledged hand-in-hand model school or taking parts of the curriculum and the idea that hand-in-hand presents of bringing Jews and Arabs together, there are ways that we can have a wider reverberating effect in Israeli society without necessarily everybody participating in this kind of school.
Your first graduates, they're probably just finishing their military service. They're starting their own careers. Are they involved with the school in some way still today?
Yeah. You know, we didn't do this for quite a while, but starting about 2 years ago, we created an alumni program. We've now had 7 high school graduating classes. Not a large group. The high school looks small, but we've hired a part-time alumni coordinator, and the goal is to give these graduates a forum and an avenue for them to continue to be involved both in the school in Jerusalem where our high school is located, but also doing their own kind of thing. So, you know, the statistics that I have are that 60% of our high school graduates have been participating in regular meetings. We have several times a year a weekend kind of conference that brings them all together. Part of it's social, and part of it's, you know, empowering them to do something with what they learned in school. So, for example, there is a student, an Arab student who's at a university in the south of Israel in the city of Beersheba. He's in student government, and he's promoting the creation of Jewish-Arab dialogue groups among the university students. There are others who created this sort of social media campaign promoting the use of Arabic and Hebrew together in public spaces. Some of them are volunteering in our school in Jerusalem. Some of them act as tour guides when new prospective parents come to look, you know, whether they want to enroll their kindergartners or preschoolers or first graders in the school. They act as tour guides and talk about their experiences growing up in the school. I mean, it's the best kind of marketing is someone who went through the school and can speak honestly about what their experience was. And some of it's really just bringing them together. And you know, they're too young to, they're not parents yet. They're too young to hang out with the 30 and 40 somethings. but they're too old to, you know, they're in their early 20s, many of them. The Jewish students go to their military service. Arabs are not drafted in Israel, so they separate for a couple of years there. But Israel's a small country, about the size of the state of New Jersey, so it's easy to, you know, whether you're living in the north or the south, it's easy to see each other on the weekend or something like that.
Lee Gordon, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Lee Gordon is the founder of Hand in Hand, the Center for Jewish-Arab Education in Israel, and the winner of this year's Brock International Prize in Education. He'll be speaking about his experiences at the 2018 Brock International Symposium, which takes place this Thursday at 2:30 at the Helmreich Center for American Research at Gilchrist Museum. That lecture is free to the public. For information on the Brock Prize, visit brockprize.org. For information on Hand in Hand, visit handinhandk12.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.